I don't think you'll hear much Bach in this film score. And the Miles Davis reference, I'm a big fan of a piano player that he used a lot called Bill Evans. I've kind of studied the way that he used kind of jazz harmony, and there's quite a lot of that in Downton. I know it's surprising, but there's probably more Miles Davis in Downton than there is Bach.
That's Scottish composer John Lunn, who's best known for writing the theme and all the music for the Downton Abbey TV series. He grew up with a father who played saxophone, and his mom, she was the one in love with classical music. His dad loved Miles Davis, his mom loved Bach, and as you just heard, there's a little bit more Miles than Bach in the new film score to Downton Abbey, the movie. That's what we're going to be exploring this week on New Classical Tracks from American Public Media. I'm Julia Mocker. I'm talking with John Lunn, the composer of the Downton Abbey film music. And John, the last time you and I talked was in 2016 when the series was wrapping up its sixth and final season. And I'm curious, what have you been up to since then?
Oh my God. What have I been up to? I've been doing, you know, much the same, really. I decided to do a Netflix series called The Last Kingdom, because it was very, very different musically from Downton Abbey. And I've been doing things like Grantchester and White Queen and another series called Jamestown and another one called Shetland. So I've been pretty busy.
You also joked at that time about all the going-away parties that were being thrown, almost 6 months' worth.
Oh, yeah.
So I'm wondering now, how has it been kind of reuniting with the Downton Abbey family?
It's been great, actually. It was really nice us all coming back together again because we'd formed such a good and unique team that it was quite joyful, and in the end, it was an awful lot easier than I was expecting it to be.
Well, tell me more about that.
Well, partly because, you know, I thought when we're going to do a movie, I thought, okay, so we're going to do a movie. How different is it going to be? But then actually, when once they'd sort of set down to film it and I started looking at it, it wasn't like we were doing a remake of the TV series. You know, it's actually a direct continuation of the story. I think there's about a year's gap. So a lot of those themes that we were working with that, you know, had developed towards the end of the whole season were kind of exported quite easily into the movie. And, you know, just like every episode always had some kind of new storyline, so there was always a need for some, you know, new music element, but in combination with musical elements that we'd built up before, and the movie's not really been that different. It's just been on a bigger scale. We've got a bigger budget and a bit more time, so it does sound grander, but it still sounds like Downton Abbey to me.
So what might the biggest difference be between writing for a series on television versus writing a film score in this case?
In the case of Downton, you know, not really that much. Just a little bit more time to write it, maybe a bit more time to experiment, and certainly more time to record it. You know, do different takes of some recording because you don't quite know, maybe when you get into the final mix with all the dialogue you might want to revert to a kind of slightly quieter version of it, things like that. So it was more on a practical level, you know, in the TV series we just wouldn't have time to do that because we're producing an episode every 3 weeks, you know, from, you know, starting work on it to actually finishing the recording. It was just really things like that and bigger, definitely bigger orchestra. Gives me just a little bit more flexibility in what we can do. you know, like a real movie sound. But to be honest, I think the TV series always sounded a bit like a movie anyway. You know, and certainly a lot of the production values were very, you know, movie-like. You know, it's all, Downton always looked fantastic.
Well, and you've always been one to write to what's happening on the screen, right?
Yeah, very much so.
Did this give you that opportunity to do the same? Were you able to do something in a similar way when you wrote the score?
Yeah. I always look at the screen, you know, and the dialogue's massively important to me because it's very carefully choreographed, you know, underneath the dialogue. And also, you know, the timing of it, the way that it moves, you know, takes you from one scene into another is kind of the way I work. So I need to look at the screen and see how it's working, really.
And you're also a very good listener. Can you give me an example about how that skill as being a fine-tuned listener was really beneficial, for example, in the case of writing the music for this film?
So I'm always listening to the dialogue, and I kind of chart my way, you know, around it. I mean, it's very important for me to understand the underlying tensions of what's going on in the dialogue and what it means. So I do spend a lot of time analysing, you know, where the direction of the scene is going and how important it is and whether I should be... Well, sometimes, you know, the music can subvert that or it can heighten it. Or even sometimes I'm actually setting up a scene that we haven't even arrived at yet. Certainly in the first 20 minutes of the film, there's kind of a lot of introductions because we're reintroducing characters that people know, but their circumstances might have slightly changed. So there's a lot of that kind of kicking off a scene, starting it in the previous scene, and then you kind of arrive at it. So there's quite a lot of, you know, devices like that. So I am very, very picture specific. I'm not one of those people who sits down at a piano and bashes out a tune and then goes and tries it to the picture, if that makes any sense.
Let's talk a little bit about the movie itself. What can you share with us about the plot without, you know, without it being a spoiler alert?
So I think the hardest thing was probably, you know, in a TV series, we've got so many characters and it's a big cast. There's always quite a lot of different stories going on all at the same time. You know, for the movie, that was tricky. We had to find one storyline that all other stories could come from. But for me, the big sort of storyline doesn't actually affect the music. The music's still very much about all the characters, you know, in Downton Abbey and their relationships to each other. So the music, which is about the you know, the big event about the king and the queen coming, is I'm not really kind of part of. There's one big scene, I think, where I have had to chart it and become kind of quite regal. I think the music gets very regal at one particular point.
Now, why are the King and Queen coming to Downton?
They're touring Yorkshire. It's kind of part of their duty to make themselves, you know, seen and be conspicuous in Britain where they're not seen very much. And Downton Abbey is obviously just one part of a tour. And they're only really there for a lunch and a dinner and a parade. So they're not actually there for very long. But, I mean, the upheaval and the effort that everybody has to go to make sure that it goes okay. As you can imagine, in Downton Abbey, there are times when everything doesn't go okay. And some of that, you know, is hysterically funny. There's probably more comedy in it than we might normally have in an episode. There's quite a lot of comic music. There's one particularly called Two Households, which is... So the King and Queen's household also arrives in Downton Abbey. And the staff of Downton Abbey think they're going to be providing for the King and Queen, and this is going to be one of their big moments. But actually, it turns out the King and Queen turn up with their own household, and there's this kind of rivalry, which is actually hysterically funny.
I'm looking at some of the other titles, like Sabotage.
Oh, yeah, well, Sabotage is another one to do with the two different households competing to serve the King and Queen.
I have to say, when I listened to that piece, it had this sort of sense of mystery about it, almost like a James Bond film.
That's deliberate.
And then the honor is restored.
Honor is restored is a reference to, well, I don't know whether I should give it up, how much I should give away, but basically, as you can imagine, the Downton household is triumphant. But you'll have to wait and see how exactly that happens.
So what's happening in the piece that's called Never Seen Anything Like It?
That's actually in a club scene that Thomas goes to. I'm actually in the movie. I'm actually playing the piano in this kind of, well, obviously in those days, illegal gay jazz bar. And I'm only in it for about 5 seconds.
One of the pieces is titled Maud. Is that a new character?
Yes, that is a new character, yeah.
Is that somebody you can tell us about, or will that spoil it?
That's the cousin of Lord Grantham. And when she dies, technically she's supposed to leave everything to Lord Grantham. But she's already told him that she's not. So there's a kind of whole mystery around who she's going to sort of leave it for, and that music, the music Maud, is taken directly from a scene where she explains exactly who she's going to leave it to and why and the significance of it. So it's quite a moving scene, that one.
You got to compose some new music for the film. Tell me about what you were most proud of when it came to writing the new music.
I think one of the hardest ones was towards the very end. There's a fantastic scene on the balcony, and it's the end of a, you know, what's been a huge ballroom scene that has been mainly the music of Johann Strauss. And at one point, I think in the script, the music of the ballroom was going to carry on out to the balcony, and the two characters were going to be dancing to Johann Strauss. But actually, when we came to it and we edited it, we felt that it needed something more emotional. So I decided to, along with my orchestrator, we actually arranged the Strauss in a way that I could move from Strauss towards the end of the ballroom scene out onto the balcony, and we'd move to Downton Abbey music. It was really quite tricky to do that in a way that didn't, you know, call attention to itself, and it kind of sneaks up on you, and you're kind of unaware of it. That was by far the trickiest.
What about the beginning of the film, where There's no dialogue.
There's no dialogue for the first 4.5 minutes.
So it's all you.
Yeah. You know, I knew it was coming. You know, I talked to the director about it, and we'd had this idea that we didn't want to open with that famous tune. We wanted to hold back on it, you know, as long as we possibly could. So the first couple of minutes is almost like a compendium of music that we've had from the TV series, you know, but just on a much, much grander scale. And then, you know, when we finally cut to the house, which I think is 2.5 or even 3 minutes into the movie, we actually cut to the theme music.
Any final thoughts that you'd like to add about the film score or anything else that you have coming up you want us to know about?
I'm just about to start a new Julian Fellowes project called Belgravia. And really, I shouldn't be here in New York. I should be back home writing it. And I'm actually quite nervous. After all I've done, I still find the blank sheet of paper, you know, at the beginning of every project, really scary. And I'm in that moment at the moment.
Scottish composer John Lunn talking about the film score to Downton Abbey, the movie. If you're enjoying new classical tracks, the absolute best thing you can do for the show is to tell somebody about it. Help spread the word, and also take a moment to rate and review us on your podcasting app. Special thanks to Valerie Kaler for producing this episode. I'm Julie Amacher, and this is New Classical Tracks from American Public Media.